This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello and welcome to the 320th edition of the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast. In Nashville, Tennessee, I'm Matt Perkins. And a flea flicker across the Harpeth River from me here in the Music City, it's our own offensive coordinator, the coach, Corey Burton.
What's up, guys? I'm gearing up for a big, long road trip to Dalton, Georgia, the carpet capital of the world, to take on Christian Heritage. So that'll be a nice, fun afternoon for me. So, getting ready for week seven. It's already week seven of the high school season. That's crazy.
That's pretty insane. Go Tigers. I can't do a good, I don't do good impressions around these parts, so I will not
go,
try
go
to
Tigers.
Go Tigers. Go Tigers. Can't get into it or talk about the Tigers without the third amigo in the second city, a man who is very glad he is not part of the crew of the 6,000 ship. It's our intrepid blogger from Big Ten and Counting, Josh Cook, and that is a very deep inside joke.
Well, after the horrific weekend that I experienced with my Iowa Hawkeyes, I was like, I need a winner. Who can I root for that's a winner? Chicago's Big Ten team, right? Northwestern, they just took down Minnesota, they're on a winning streak, a one-game winning streak. I'm now all in, baby. I'm aboard the Northwestern Express. Let's go.
And the Cubs train, apparently.
Yeah, with that.
My Padres, mathematically still alive, unless the Marlins win.
Well,
our Braves are kicking ass.
Our Braves are kicking ass. And if you want to wager on those Atlanta Braves, there is only one place that you should be doing that. And it's betonline.ag, who also happens to be our presenting sponsor alongside MikeFerrellSports.com. But like we're saying, if you want to go bet in the Braves, and you want to go bet in the Braves, like, this is a college football podcast, but this is also two very diehard Braves fans telling you, like, to just bet on the Braves. Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you want to go over and do that at betonline.ag, where they continue to be your number one source for all of your online sports wagering needs. You name it, they've got it over there at BetOnline. Head on over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV, BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, gents.
If you did a prop on Ronald Cunha, either home run or stolen base, 40 times this year he hit a home run, 70 times he swiped a base. Yeah. So yeah, your odds were pretty good.
I like that. Your odds also tend to be pretty good if you just, for most things in the state of Georgia, or at least the Dogs, the Braves.
Man, well, no. If you bet against the spread with the Dogs, your odds are great. We haven't covered a spread all year.
Well, I was just going money line here, Coach. It doesn't matter.
Money line.
Yeah. I mean, your Dogs did not cover last week, but that was far from the most important thing that happened in week four. We're going to go quick around the room to talk about what our biggest takeaway was from last weekend before we get into another exciting slate of games for week five. I'm going to start, And my one big takeaway from last weekend is that the cream of the crop in the Pac-12 is the best out of any conference in the country. The foursome of Oregon, Washington, USC, and Utah are the best foursome at the top of any league in the country for my money. If you want to go deeper than that, that's fine. Washington State, super athletic. They beat a Oregon State team who I know we all think is very, very good and very, very strong. Colorado's already had their moments. UCLA still has a very good defense if they have an inexperienced quarterback. They're going with Dante Moore at this point. Doesn't matter. I still think that the best football and the best upper crust of teams is in the Pac-12. And you can also make a case that the best four quarterbacks this season all reside in the Pac-12. I will grant you some Tyler Van Dyke, Riley Leonard, you know, Drake May have all been very good. But I think that when you watch Penix and Caleb Williams and Bo Nix and Shedeur Sanders, even with the loss last weekend, you see four quarterbacks who are playing at an incredible level. And it's a damn shame that this conference is going away. Josh, what did you take away from last weekend?
The Pac-2, baby.
Well, I think we all know where I'm heading. I did the hat bit at the beginning to have some humor. But the Hawkeyes, I mean, just awful. Awful. First shutout since 2000. And, you know, I picked Penn State to win. I picked Penn State to cover the 14.5 points. Did not expect to score a lot. But this was just, if this is not rock bottom, I don't know what rock bottom could be. They had two first downs.
The rock will give you the rock bottom. That's what that'll be.
The two first downs in the first quarter and then none. Until garbage time of the fourth. They had four first downs, 1 for 9 on third, 76 total yards, 56 passing yards, 20 rushing yards on 17 carries. They had four penalties, the same as Penn State. That's very atypical for Iowa. They had four turnovers. They lost four fumbles, with one being just a backbreaker on a punt early in the game when they had a really good gutsy defensive stop, and they set Penn State up for their first touchdown. They had possession for just 14 minutes and 33 seconds. Cade McNamara went 5 of 14 for 42 yards. He looked awful. And this is a guy who at Michigan could play. So I don't think it's on him. I don't think it's on Cade. It's on the coaching. And I know Iowa fans are quick, you know, the ones that are Ferentz fanatics are quick to say, hey, the offensive line isn't playing very well. The OC can scheme around that, right? No. That's possible. That's possible.
Also, didn't For the OC instance, come from being an offensive line coach? And
he did. He did. For instance, there are plenty of teams that don't have very good offensive lines right now. For instance, I know it's weird. I'm doing an NFL team. The Dolphins put up 70 points in a pro game, and people that really follow the NFL don't really have the Dolphins offensive line like in the top 2 or 3, like, or even maybe the top 5 or 10. Like, it's a pretty mid-level offensive line, and they are able to scheme around that and use motion and stuff. So just completely inept, awful, awful, awful coaching. And the Ferentz family basically is doing a huge middle finger to Iowa and the fan base. When asked about it, Kirk said that, quote, "We're not going to create a new playbook. Is that what you're suggesting? I'm not a wholesale believer in changing things because you had one bad game." We were effing awful at defense or at offensive last year. We were one of the worst in the entire country. It's not one bad game. It's one bad season followed by one of the sorry, Matt, you're going to have to edit that. Offensive performances in 30 years. Like, we haven't been shut out since 2000. This is absurd.
Is that bad?
This is completely, completely absurd. And then Ferentz was asked about how there's only been 35 catches by wide receivers in four games. And he's like, oh, well, you know, we want to get the wide receivers involved more. Yet, no shit, but your son lacks the ability to do it. And, you know, Iowa has their athletic director retired. Gary Bard is gone. There's an interim AD. She should have just fired Brian on Sunday. She's the interim AD. She's probably not going to get the job, but she would be the fan base's first choice for getting the job if she had fired him. And
yeah, that's not gonna
the other thing. Yeah. The other thing she could have done is told Brian or told Kirk, your son or you. And if he wants to retire because of his son, that's his choice. Iowa did that way back in the 70s. We had a coach who was refusing to fire his defensive coordinator friend. The AD said, yeah, you do have the right to choose your staff. I have the right to choose you. Fired him. This is unacceptable. And what's just insane is, like, you know, Kirk's keeping him around thinking like he'll be get to be a part of the next regime. No, he ain't. He ain't going to become the next Iowa head football coach. And the next staff is just going to fire him the second they can. Kirk is thinking like he's untouchable. No, he ain't. His little golden parachute of Gary Bard is retired. It's a new AD. Brian is ruining his own dad's legacy. And Kirk is hanging on to this completely moronic offensive coordinator just because he's his son. And I know that's really hard, but this is a multi-million dollar endeavor, and we cannot score, and we cannot gain first downs. It's kind of an issue, and it's just insane.
You've been listening to the Iowa Offensive Minute, presented by no one, because no one wants to be associated with Iowa's offense.
Did I run too long, Matt?
Coach, what did you learn in week four, besides the fact that Iowa has another historically bad offense?
How great would it be if Coach just teed off on Iowa and we had two back-to-back seconds?
No, I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay, so Iowa, no.
The problem with the outside zone.
So the outside zone is a very good play, but when you call it over and over again out of predictable formations, it's not quite as effective. No, okay. One thing I learned a lot just from this weekend. One thing I learned is that Florida State might be for real, and Clemson definitely is not for real.
Dabo told me that they're three plays away from being undefeated.
Well, yeah. Three play. So there was more than three plays in that Duke blowout, just so you know. I got so excited I dropped an Allen wrench. So Jordan Travis, man, they got off to a slow start. They didn't play. So they won in a hostile environment, didn't play their best without their starting left tackle. And I thought they looked as good as anybody in the country. I mean, I was very impressed with what Florida State was able to do in a game that most of the time they probably would have lost, especially with the start they got off to, or the start that Clemson got off to. And usually that would have been a Clemson blowout. But on the other side of that coin,
also quick interjectory,
is the end
Florida State not. Oh, I want to get to that in a second, but Florida State not having kicker problems and Clemson having kicker problems this time.
Yeah.
That was
They had to call the dude off the street, man. He was getting he was going to start his job in New York City on Monday, and they said, "Hey, do you want to come kick?"
Yep.
He's like, "Sure."
I feel bad for that kid.
Yeah, he should have just taken the job.
Yeah, but
that's on Dabo. That's poor plan.
Two Noles won all ACC honors. Kalen Deloche with a nice strip sack there in overtime to preserve the win was ACC linebacker of the week, and Renardo Green was the co-defensive back of the week for the ACC.
I didn't realize that they had positional awards in the ACC.
That's how they do's it, man. That's how they do's it. I also learned that if you poke Nick Saban, he will light you up. Just want to throw that out there. He will light you up.
We need to have a bigger conversation about Dabo.
Yes, we do. So what's going on there? Like I think is all that NIL talk saying like, hey, I'm going to quit if, you know, NIL becomes a thing or we don't use the transfer portal, those type of things. Like what, like that's driving recruits away. Like nobody wants to go there. They're starting to kind of see through him a little bit. Like some things are going south for him.
I
think it's his staff turnover too. I mean, you look at some of the incredible football minds that have left. Obviously, the biggest is Brent Venables, and Oklahoma's looks pretty dang good here to start the season. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, I know, obviously, his coaching tree is taking a hit with, let's say, what happened at Virginia and South Florida and whatnot. But when they were a part of that staff, they were undeniably a very, very good staff.
Yeah, they were good. They were good together, and maybe that's something that he's probably going to try to get back together.
Get the band back together.
If he can, yeah. To save his job, I guess. I don't know. He's not on the hot seat, Clemson.
No. He's not on the hot seat. But I think that he also puts extra pressure on himself because of the way that he carries himself, mm-hmm. And the religiosity and fervor with how he speaks and what he claims to be about. I don't think that I think it also makes him, like, because of that stubbornness as well, just makes him a pretty, I don't say an easy target, but like, mm-hmm. I mean, he's a target. He's opening himself up to that by, you know, sort of behaving and being so public about it. I think that, you know, Clemson's always been under Swinney pretty diligent, like with the offers they've put out as well. In terms of like, you know, if you're in the recruiting weeds, you know that like a lot of times if a guy says, "Oh, I got offered by X," that doesn't mean that that's a committable offer. Right. That doesn't mean that like I can go say, "Hey, today I'm going to sign with you." It's like, no, like we're interested in you. Like we're giving you a rose here on, you know, we want to keep you in contention. We might cut you later, but you know, Clemson is one of the few schools though that is going to be like, if we give you an offer, that means it's committable on the spot every time.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so, and that is, you know, Wisconsin used to be like that under Crist, under Alvarez, under, you know, under Bielema. And there are fewer and fewer schools that do that and handle recruiting that way. And in the portal era, like you have to be more nimble, you have to be more agile, and you have to cast a wider net.
Yeah. So. Or you're not going to catch anything. I mean, it's, you know, with the transfer portal too, like you have to take advantage of the portal, maybe not so much to overhaul your roster year in and year out, but like to fill some pieces where maybe you miss in the high school recruiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't have
to. He's just not doing that.
You don't have to be Deion Sanders in Colorado, but you also would be negligent as a coach and not trying to improve your team as much as possible.
He's the other end of the spectrum. Like you got Deion who just grabbed a new team out of the portal, and then you got Dabo who refuses to use the portal at all.
And then in the middle, you've got Mike Norvell who uses the portal to get really good impact players. Keon Coleman, Jared Verse, like guys who are studs.
Sparty could use Keon.
Who fill in the gaps that, you know, they already have a good quarterback in Jordan Travis. They already have.
Yeah, he had a pretty good game.
You know, and yeah, they already have Trey Benson, right? And so, yeah.
Florida State's stacked, dude.
Dude, they are stacked. They're really, really good.
In a year where there's no true number one team. And I know what you're going to say. Georgia's just there by default right now.
I was going to say, actually, what would Washington need to do to? Because I think just eye test why Washington.
They
could. If you had to put four teams in the CFP today, who would be your four teams? Because I'll tell you who mine are. Like mine
I'm gonna
are.
Say, I'm going to say Georgia, Florida State, Alabama, and Ole Miss. No. Washington and Michigan probably, or Penn State maybe.
No, it's Penn State. It's absolutely Penn State for me. In my seedings would probably, like, I would probably have Florida State 1, Penn State 2, Georgia 3, Washington 4. Just based on what I've seen on the field this year. I still think Georgia has the most talent. I think everyone thinks that Georgia has the most talent.
Georgia's got a lot of guys out right now.
But yeah, they're missing guys.
So we don't really know what Georgia's like because we don't have all the pieces.
I think Penn State's great. Like I picked them, you know, I picked them as my I finally took them this year and took the big swing and said they're going to win the division. So I'm feeling pretty good about that right now. I love the direction of that team. So
yeah,
Josh, who's your Final Four?
Iowa, Georgia,
Northwestern.
Yeah,
Rutgers.
Definitely. Yeah. No, I think
in Boston College.
I think Georgia and Washington Washington's passed the eye test completely so far, and
they're physical.
Georgia. I mean, and until we see something other than that, like gotta have Georgia in there
to be the man. You gotta beat the man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Michigan has just been truly suffocating on defense right now. They are they're pretty loaded, and I'm kind of curious about the Big 12. I'm really excited for that Texas Kansas game. Yep. I've seen bits and pieces of Texas so far, but you know, my loyalty to David Beatty, I got to watch the whole Kansas game.
Texas came out. They came out the gate strong, man. They went to Tuscaloosa and won. So you got to give them credit where credit's due. You know.
Yeah. All right. Well, in that case, let's move on to what we are interested in. What I have deemed, I guess, are the five biggest games for the weekend. We will start on Friday night. The weekend kicks off with a bang in Corvallis. The Beavers, coming off of that tough loss to Washington State, have no time to recuperate. Utah is coming into town. Yeah. It'd be easier if Iowa was coming into town, but Utah is coming into town. This might be the most physical game of not only this week, but like the entire season. Both these teams are bullies. Josh, what do you think Oregon State needs to do to avoid going on a two-game skid?
This is such a cop-out answer, but it's the thing that I feel most serious about, and that is just they ain't playing Cameron Ward. Cam Ward had over 400 passing yards. Cam Ward, you know, if they were calling people to New York City right now, if they did a four-game Heisman, you have to have Cam Ward as a finalist. He's been phenomenal and just completely sliced and diced Oregon State. Utah's passing game, not there right now. Cam Rising, he keeps being up in the air. We don't know when is he going to finally make his season debut and stuff.
I think it's going to wait. I heard it's going to wait another week. I think he's still beat up, right?
Yeah, so I think it's actually just that simple. It's addition by subtraction. You're not having to take on Cam Ward.
Yeah, Coach, I think the one other thing I could, you know, I would add to that is that, like, they limit the turnovers in this one, and I really like their chances. Mm-hmm. I feel like Utah's defense, like, feasts. Like, they had, you know, half the points they scored against UCLA were defensive points. You know, on pick six, first play of the game, right? Mm-hmm. And
yeah, that's a tough Utah's for
defense.
UCLA.
Utah's defense knows that they have to do everything for this team right now and literally score, like, you know, pull an Iowa and have the defense scoring just as much as the offense, if not more, so that they have a chance to win. And I think that's tough to do every single week. And ahead, Josh.
I was going to say, speaking about the Utah pick six, they had one earlier in the season, but the UCLA one reminded me of this great stat. Do you know how many years in a row Utah has had at least one pick six on the season?
I'm going to go 13.
More.
27.
16.
Coach needs a little bit more, Matt. You need a little bit less. It's 20.
20. 20 straight years of the
20 pick. Years. Yeah, 20 years. As far as I know, that's the longest streak in the country.
Wow.
Dang.
To have at least one pick six on a season.
Interesting. Okay. That is a very interesting stat that I did not know. Thank you, Josh. So, Coach, you got anything here on this one you want to add?
No, I mean, I think you guys pretty much covered it. I mean, Utah's defense is going to have to make up for backup quarterback, the backup quarterback duo, I guess you should say, for one more week and hopefully get some things out of the run game. And, just kind of out physical Washington State and just kind of win an ugly one.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the ACC, quasi-ACC, I should say. The Golden Domers from Notre Dame in the marquee game of the week for the second week in a row. Coach, my question for you is it weird that I think that the Blue Devils offense will actually have more success than the Buckeyes did last week? I mean, Notre Dame only gave up 17 points, but I have like a strong feeling in my loins that Riley Leonard has a much better chance of succeeding against Notre Dame than Kyle McCord did. Am I like completely out of my mind?
No, you're not. Because Duke, it's a better operation with what Duke's got going on, because, you know, at Ohio State, they have a bunch of new pieces. Kyle McCord's a new starter. Ryan Day's still trying to get used to having him. The only real piece that they have is Marvin Harrison Jr. So it's not ridiculous to think that a veteran-laden offense is going to have more success against a similar opponent. I mean, you know, Riley Leonard is probably at worst number three quarterback in the country behind Caleb Williams and Drake May. I mean, that dude is special, man. He's just some of the things he can do, the things he adds in the run game, just the decisions he makes. You know, when they go tempo a little bit, like, he really just kind of commands things out there, and he has a way better feel for the game than Kyle McCord probably ever will.
Yeah, plus a road game for Ohio State, you know, never easy going into Touchdown Jesus there in South Bend.
Yeah,
especially at night.
But yeah, you know, I'm looking at Duke's schedule versus Notre Dame's schedule, and it's like, so Notre Dame obviously had the big game with Ohio State. But Navy has not looked terribly good this year. Tennessee State down the FCS ranks. A road trip to NC State where, you know, Notre Dame played pretty well in that one. And then Central Michigan. But, like, Duke, taking on Clemson, who, you know, yeah, we're kind of fired up on.
They're still Clemson, man.
Yeah, I mean,
like, it's still.
We're down on them, but they're still going to go to a bowl. They're still probably going to win 8-9 games. Like, it's nothing.
They're just not the Clemson that's always making the playoffs and a lock to win the ACC. Like, yeah. That's what we're saying.
Yeah. And then they had an FCS team and then Northwestern and Connecticut. So Notre Dame is more tested by a little bit, right? Like, the NC State game and the Ohio State game are good. But, like, we're talking about, you know, slightly better. This is not a Duke team that's like 4-0 because they loaded up on cupcakes. Like, you know, they've had a major conference game with Clemson. They've played another Power 5 team with Northwestern. Northwestern, you know, hasn't been great, but they just took down Minnesota. Like, this Duke team's for real. They're killing these teams, right? And I just don't think people really are realizing that this Duke team is that good. And, you know, they're getting game day. They're going to be fired up for it.
People don't want to believe that this Duke team is really good because Duke's hasn't been really that good. Besides a little blip with David Cutcliffe there.
Also, like,
hey, they were good in the 40s.
they were good under Spurrier.
Everyone's saying that, like, Mike Elko should take the Michigan State job. Just stop.
No.
Just
no,
stop.
Don't do that.
Like, that tells me you haven't thought like for more than like a nanosecond about it whatsoever. Moving on.
Yeah, I mean, well, Michigan State is like, I mean, that's a festering hole. I don't know why any up and coming coach would want to take that job. I really think that they might have to look for kind of a retread to see them through a year or two, in terms of like
get them they need somebody to get them stabilized is what they need.
Yeah,
is there? I mean, they're spiraling down the freaking toilet right now.
Yeah, in terms of where's Mike Elko gonna go?
I don't think he's gonna go anywhere.
He might stay his butt right at Duke.
Why not?
Yeah, he's building something nice at Duke. You know, people say, well, oh, he's got those Texas A&M ties. He was a defensive coordinator there a few years ago, like for a few years. It's not like he went to Texas A&M. It's not like he's a Texas A&M lifer. If anything, you look at his history, he's a Jersey boy, who played at Penn, who then got his coaching start at Stony Brook, spent some time at the Merchant Marine.
So you think he's going to Merchant Marines?
He spent some time at Wake. I'm saying he seems like he might kind of have a little chip on his shoulder. He was also at Bowling Green. He was at Bowling Green and Wake. Who was he with? Mr. Clausen, who seems to really enjoy being over there at Wake. I think there's a better than what people seem to realize chance. People are saying it's like a 0% chance. They haven't gone. They haven't gone like next week. And it's like, maybe he will. Maybe he will bolt at the end of the season.
Well, if the right opportunity comes, he could, and I wouldn't blame him. But yeah. I don't think he's just going to take something just to take something. I think he's got a good thing going at Duke, also, and I think Duke is taking care of him.
He, like Josh has said, like,
and certainly not for Michigan State.
You could, no. He could be, you know, Dave Clausen 2.0 right there. You don't have all the pressure every single year. And also, you know, UNC students refer to Duke as the State University of New Jersey to begin with. So, you know, it's a perfect match for a Jersey boy to be at Duke.
Yeah.
So.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats, BEETS.com, and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's move to another program people are talking.
They're going to change Krzyzewskiville to Elkoville.
The Elko Land, Elko City.
Elko City.
Elkoton, yeah. Elkoton.
No, Elko City is good. That's
Elko
a good
City.
One.
Like Elko that. City. Yeah, like all right. USC, Colorado, the Buffs were finally exposed last week. They got shellacked by Oregon. Josh, the reason I have this game in here is not because I think that it's going to be like a super competitive game, but A, it's what everyone is talking about, and B, like just – are there any reasons to believe that we won't see a repeat again of Colorado, Oregon, just put USC in Oregon's place? Like, is Caleb Williams and the Trojans offense just going to, like, you know, swamp the field with them?
This take brought to you by Charmin Ultrasoft.
Yeah. Wow. I mean,
burn.
There's so
talking about, you USC. Know,
I was very curious about what Colorado would look like against Oregon. So I watched a lot of that first half. And what it told me was Colorado is improved. They won one game last year. So they are improved. But the gap between them and Oregon is gargantuan. And the gap between Oregon and USC, if there is one, is minuscule. So USC is up there at Oregon's level. Oregon has probably a better defense. With Caleb Wilson versus Bo Nix, you can make an argument that USC has a better offense, although Oregon looked freaking phenomenal. And I think if there's one play to kind of typify it, it was Oregon running a fake punt at their own 37.
Early.
Yeah. Zero fear. And, you know, and an anonymous assistant coach said heading into the Oregon game that, like, anyone breaking down tape ain't afraid of Colorado. And this is not a reflection on Dion, and this is not a reflection on how Coach Prime built his team through the portal. We were, you know, I don't think any of us were haters. We were just skeptical that it would work. And, you know, I think it's obvious that Colorado is better and more competitive than they were last year.
It was too much overhaul. Yes. And I think they lack a lot of beef up front.
They have no beef.
They have no beef and they have no depth. And
so like the Wendy's lady.
They're very, very competitive for a minute. Where's the beef? So It's not a slight at Deion. I just think we just are starting to realize just how much of an uphill climb this Colorado program is actually in.
And I think, you look at the TCU Colorado game, week one always throws weird curveballs at you because you have all camp, you have all offseason to get ready for one opponent.
I don't know that TCU is all of what we're thinking they are.
No, I know, but like when you have that much time to prepare for one opponent, you can really, punch above your weight. And if you're the favored team and you're breaking in a bunch of new pieces like TCU was, you might be really clunky. I mean, probably the most classic example of this was Appalachian State going into the Big House and upsetting a top 10 team when they were in the FCS. They had like all offseason to figure out what Michigan's going to run. And Lloyd Carr basically was like, well, we're Michigan. We're just going to run Mike Hart 3 yards in a cloud of dust and call it a day. And App State was like, well, we got some speed. We're going to use our speed advantage. And it was history.
Yeah. I think the only thing that Colorado might have in its favor this week is the fact that it's at home at altitude in Denver, maybe giving them a little bit. But yeah, you're right, Coach. I don't think that they have the requisite girth to keep do anything with USC. Speaking of girth,
but that being said, I still think USC is very soft.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
But this is not the game to determine if they are if they have firmed up at all. Let's head down to the SEC. Lane Kiffin and the Rebs need to bounce back in a big way after a coach, like you mentioned earlier. They fell very flat against Alabama last week. Coach, Tigers have... but the Bayou Bengals, I should say, have really started to click on offense recently. Malik Nabers looks outstanding. And I just think that it's really starting to gel there. So do you see a way that Ole Miss will be able to slow them down? Or will it be two pretty ugly losses in a row for Ole Miss?
Look, this game is – these two teams are very bitter rivals. So – a lot of conventional wisdom is thrown out in this matchup. I'll be interested to see if it was just a really bad Mississippi State team that LSU jumped all over, or if they're actually kind of hitting on all cylinders, or if it's kind of a combination of they're hitting on all cylinders and took advantage of opportunity of a weak team. Ole Miss, I think they kind of psyched themselves out a little bit. They decided they weren't going to play in the middle of the field last week against Alabama when Alabama was just bracketing the sidelines and saying, okay, sure, if you want to play outside the numbers, we're just going to sit out here and make plays on you all week, all day. And Ole Miss actually had control of that game at the start. And then they started
Alabama
kind of
discover they had a quarterback.
Alabama discovered that they have a quarterback and a few five-star players and said, okay, we're going to play like five-star players now. And they just kind of ran away with it. So I don't know. Like, the jury's still out on Ole Miss. Like, this is their chance to kind of – I still think they're very talented in a lot of spots. If they use Quinshon Judkins the way they should and the way they have prior to the Alabama game – I think this will be a competitive matchup between two good teams. But if they come out like they did last week, which is a weird game plan in of itself, this could be a very, very ugly loss. So it's like, which Lane Kiffin's going to show up? Is it going to be the super focused one that wants to bear down and win a meaningful game? Or is this one that's just all he's interested in is the Twitter spot or the X spotlight or the Instagram spotlight and just trolling Brian Kelly? Like, which Lane Kiffin are we going to get?
Yeah, I mean, the Bama Ole Miss game, I watched a fair amount of that. There, when it was on, there was a little bit of a lull in some of the Big Ten stuff, and I was like, all right, well, Alabama already lost once at home. What can Ole Miss do? And I saw Bama's defense just gobble them up. They had 5 sacks, 10 tackles for loss. LSU's as good up front as Alabama is, so that doesn't bode well. And then I'm serious. This Jalen Milroe kid, I know he really struggled at the start of the year, and then he sat out.
They just don't know how to use
South Florida game.
Tommy Reese doesn't know how to use him.
I know. I think it's becoming more of a Tommy Reese thing, because that Milroe touchdown pass, if you haven't watched this third quarter touchdown pass, he is getting blown up on it. He can't hardly step into the throw, and just threw it on a rope. And it was like, holy smokes. Where were they hiding this kid these first few weeks? Because he looked, you know, I know he's young. He's got a lot to learn, but I'm thinking it's more of a Reese thing, because he looked like he might have it.
Yeah.
It's gotta be like it absolutely has to be, because the play calling all of a sudden got a lot better in the second half. They finally said, okay, Milroe, I think we discovered.
Paul, we got this Yankee from Indiana calling the plays. They don't know what they're doing. First time, long time. I'll take it off the air, Paul.
Hey, Paul, first time, long time, Alabama. They finally discovered the forward pass. They finally figured out that Jalen Milroe play quarterback. I'll take a call off air, Paul.
This is the first time Alabama had a good quarterback. Name one other Alabama quarterback. Nick Saban era. We finally have one. Long time, first time. I'll take it off the air, Paul.
Long time caller, first time listener.
Well, if you are a first time listener here, first of all, thank you for joining us. It's always weird here at Illegal Motion. If you're a long time though, you know how much we love the Kansas Jayhawks, and we love having your coach. Go ahead.
Well, I got a quick question. We were just doing some impressions. We occasionally like to do impressions. Yeah. Coach, by any chance, can you do a Ryan Day impersonation? Because we have a brewing Ryan Day Lou Holtz
rivalry. Yeah. So, they're not tough. They're not very physical up front.
He doesn't want to talk about Michigan.
Where's Lou Holtz? Where's Lou Holtz? I want a word with him. He told us our team wasn't tough. These boys from Ohio, they're tough. You got to work on that.
I'm the one who really should have.
You got to grow a beard and then dye it.
Well, I was going to say, I'm the one who should have the Ryan Day impersonation as the only other person who graduated from high school in New Hampshire, a la Ryan Day.
Southern voice is going to quite do it.
Yeah, two coaches did not come from the state of New Hampshire. Lance Leipold, Steve Sarkisian. Jayhawks and Longhorns are facing off in what I think Josh is probably most excited about this weekend in terms of games.
I heard they're bringing the track back at Kansas.
Well, that wouldn't do them very much good considering the game's in Austin this weekend.
Tracks are portable. They're bringing it with. They loaded it up in the truck. Bevo's going to be standing in lane 8.
And 7, 6, 5, and 4 as well.
He is not a small couch, ladies and gentlemen. That's a lane violation. Also, not sure how good he is at handing the baton off. Jayhawks, Longhorns, 2 of the remaining 3 undefeated teams in the Big 12, along with that aforementioned Oklahoma team who has played nobody, even though they like Oklahoma's statistics are gaudy, but the teams they have played are bashful. So
they're supposed to play Georgia.
Yeah, they and they chickened out of that one. So,
well, no,
I think the league told them they can't. The league
nixed that one. They didn't chicken
stupid.
Out.
It's stupid.
As much as I like to pile on Oklahoma,
I love piling
here, I do too. It's one of my favorite pastimes, but in this case, I can't, because here's the deal.
Defending the SEC already.
I know, right? Here's the deal. Like with that one, the SEC actually ruined that game for us, because the contract had the second leg of this home and home when they would already be in the conference. So,
mm-hmm. Well, then they should have just made this a neutral site game.
They couldn't agree.
Oh, it's so stupid. Petty.
They couldn't agree.
Freaking petty. Petty. You know what?
It's they couldn't
petty.
Agree.
It's petty. Yep. It's go petty like go ahead and play Central Arkansas again. That's really good for everybody.
and we'll go play Ball State.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Okay. I'm done whinging about that. This game should determine who is in the driver's seat moving forward for the Big 12 alongside of Oklahoma. Josh, you are not only our biggest Kansas guru, but also our number one Texas hater. So tell me why Lance Leipold and them boys will bring out the W in Austin.
Oh, well, I mean, look no further than Texas's next game. It's the Red River Shootout. They're going to be looking past Kansas, little old Kansas. They're getting all excited for the rivalry game, going to the state fair, eating some corn dogs, getting some funnel cake.
Deep fried Oreos.
Yeah, they're going to lose sight of it. Little old Kansas, in they come. No, in all reality, Kansas, you know, they're coming off a really nice season. We think Kansas is going to be improved. Kansas is 4-0. This game means nothing to Kansas's overall trajectory of what they are trying to build there. They can play with house money. Jalen Daniels can just let it rip there for Kansas. And, you know, for Texas's perspective, you know, Texas is cruising. So Texas should win. Texas probably will win. I know I'm the biggest Texas critic and I love Kansas, but just in terms of like reality of it, you know, Kansas is building. They're building something, but they're just not quite there yet. And I think you saw that a little bit with their struggles against BYU. Nevada's terrible. Kansas only beat them by 7. Kansas is a solid team. They're going bowling for sure. They, you know, they very well could win every game other than this Texas and Oklahoma game with how some of the Big 12 teams have looked. So they're going to have a really special season. I just think Texas has everything clicking. And as much as I like to critique them, I mean, we talked about Penix's play. We talked about Cam Ward's play. Quinn Ewers has been phenomenal as well.
Mm-hmm. Coach, one thing that I like about Kansas in this game, though, obviously you got to keep that Texas offense off the field. How do you do that? You hold on to the ball and you convert your third downs. Kansas, number one in the country, converting more than 60% of their third downs. That's an incredible clip. Incredible clip. And one of the big reasons.
Iowa converts 1 out of 9.
Yeah.
Josh doesn't know what third down conversions are. Jalen Daniels speaks to Jalen Daniels. He's a special player, man. Yep. He just gets it done. And that team just figures out ways to just move the ball down the field. And it's going to be a tough test for Texas's defense. And everybody's like, oh, this is a cakewalk. No, not at all. Not at all. And Texas may win, but I think it's like a 16.5 point spread, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's way too high.
And I think Kansas can definitely cover that. I don't know about winning outright. I think that's kind of a toss up, but this is going to be a better game than a lot of people are going to give credit for.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited about this one. I think we're all excited about this one. And so we're going to head now. Before we head out, we're each going to have one for the road. One other thing you're watching for this weekend, and for me, gentlemen, it is one of our favorite conferences in all of the land, the Fun Belt. If you are interested in Group of Five football, if you like Sun Belt football, this is an awesome, awesome slate of games this weekend in the belt. South Alabama, they're 2-2, but they dismantled Oklahoma State recently. We've all thought they're one of the most talented teams in the conference. They are at undefeated James Madison. James Madison has already beaten preseason favorite Troy and has a win at Virginia as well this year. Not as impressive, obviously, as Virginia is still down, but still a Power 5 win is a Power 5 win. Coastal Carolina in Statesboro for a big game that will determine if the Shawna Clears will even be able to contend for another division title, because they are already 2-2 and they lost to Georgia State last weekend. And not only did they lose to Georgia State, they lost to Georgia State at home in Conway. Georgia State has scored more than 30 points in every game so far this weekend. They are hosting Troy, the preseason favorite. Another awesome game there. Appalachian State heads to Monroe to play a very frisky Warhawks team. Old Dominion has, you know, a puncher's chance, I think, against Marshall. Marshall is, you know, a very good squad
in comparison.
But ODU can definitely hang with them. And then don't count out Louisiana, them Raging Cajun and them boys in the Twin Cities against a reeling Minnesota squad who is coming off of a disturbing loss to Northwestern. Should be an awesome.
They turtled so badly.
Should be an awesome
weekend. They punted like four. They punted like four times from the Northwestern 40.
Yeah,
it's just crazy.
Yeah, should be a fun weekend.
So conservative.
It'll be a fun weekend in the Fun Belt. Josh, what you got for the road for us?
All right, I got a little history lesson. We're gonna go back to 2017.
Mm. Sam Hunt. Oh,
yeah. 2017, fresh off of the state of Alabama and the Tuscaloosa Trustees trying to destroy the UAB Blazers. They're back. And they won 8 games. They went to a bowl. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. They gave up 40 points 3 times over the course of the year. Not bad. Not bad for their first year back. All right, then let's jump to 2018, coach's favorite year. They won 11 games and their bowl game. They won their conference. They gave up 40 points just twice. Then we jump to 2019. Very similar results. Another bowl, 9 wins. How many times did they give up? 40. Can I interest you in just one? One time giving up 40 points. All right, 2020 COVID year. They went 6-3. They gave up 40. Not a single time did an opponent hit 40 points. Huh? Josh keeps mentioning 40. There must be a reason for that. 2021, they won 9 games again. They upset 13th-ranked BYU in their bowl game. They gave up 40 points just once to coach's dogs. Georgia put 56 on them. And then 2022, just last year, a year ago, they won their bowl game. They went 7-6. They gave up 40 just twice. Once to LSU, pretty good team, and once in double overtime did the opponent get up to 40. All right, that means that this year's coming up. So why am I mentioning?
Well, they gave 40 up 40 points? Last week.
Yeah, why am I mentioning 40? They are 1-3, gentlemen. And in all 3 losses, they've given up 40 points. Is it already time to declare Trent Dilfer the worst coaching hire of this season? Because UAB was not this bad. He has taken a team that went to a bowl game every year, but the COVID year, every year they've been going to a bowl game, and they seldom give up 40-plus points. To they're straight dogs. This team's terrible. And, you know, Dilfer, no coaching experience. What does it mean? I don't know.
He really did the Elite 11.
Yeah, it's really early to bury a guy. But first 4 games as an impression, not pretty.
No, I mean, obviously, I watched the Georgia UAB game, so I got an idea of kind of what Dilfer brought to the table. I mean, they're not very talented.
Well, and guess what? It's not going to get any easier this week. They've got Tulane this week.
They're going to get smoked by Tulane. Just so you know, they seem disorganized at times. They have a lot of cover. They have a lot of busts.
Disorganized. That is that a reflection on someone never being a coach before?
I mean, Dilfer was a high school coach.
Okay,
I'm just saying. There have been a couple guys who've made the jump from high school coach. None of
high school to FBS.
Yeah, there was the
Bishop guy who never punts.
The Bishop Gorman.
Yeah, he went to Presbyterian and resigned after like 5 games.
The guy who was at Bishop Gorman who went to UNLV.
Already fired.
Oh yeah, no, he lasted like 3 seasons and it was terrible.
The North Texas guy, yeah. Seth Luttrell, he was there for about 2 years.
Yeah. It has rarely gone well. So, and I can't exactly say I'm surprised that Trent Dilfer is mumbling, bumbling, fumbling, stumbling, and not
the Blazers
rumbling. Yeah, they
the announcers loved him.
Well, of course they did. They all love Trent Dilfer. Okay, coach, what's your one for the road?
My one for the road is the Deep South's oldest rivalry, a game that once had a lot of luster, still kind of does, but not really that much this year. It's a stretch. But this will be Carson Beck's first true road test in a hostile environment. So I'm interested to see kind of how he handles that, because this crowd is going to be all over him to start. And he hasn't started fast in any game that he's played so far. So it's going to be interesting when he gets off to a slow start and that crowd gets into a frenzy. What does Carson Beck do? So I want to see that. I want to see if Ladd McConkey, he'll probably be limited, but see what he can provide. And of course, it's always fun and exciting watching Brock Bowers. I want to get every bit of watching Brock Bowers play football at the University of Georgia, because this is the last season that he will do so, because he will be in the NFL next year. And
this is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.